Okay, so so we start introducing the whistle-loop operators, and then
we'll talk about a bit ABS-CFT duality, and I will describe the properties that we're going to use. And then I'll try to describe you how we can compute the expectation value of Wilson loops using ABS-CFT. Okay, so what is a Wilson loop? So a Wilson loop, it's an operator and it's gauge invariant, and it's not non-local. So let me start with the U1 gauge theory. So the field content of the theory is just the gauge potential, a mu. And if I consider it a gauge transformation, a mu change in this way. So I can define a phase factor that is basically the exponential of the coupling of an external particle to the fields of the theory. And if I consider a gauge transformation, the phase factor change in this way. Okay? So basically, I pick up a phase in on the extremes of the curve where I consider the integral. Because one thing, okay, I should say that this phase factor is defined as basically the integral over the curve from one point to another. And as you can see from the way this object transforms under gauge transformation, well, the geometrical meaning of these things is basically the parallel transporter. In the sense that if I want to compare to things that transforms that are charged under the U1 gauge theory, I have to transport, well, if I want to compare these two things into different points, I have to transport one of them to the other point using this thing. Now, so if I consider a curve that is closed, the loop, this phase factor is, well, it's called a loop, it's a Wilson loop. And it's gauge invariant, because the two factors cancel when you consider the gauge transformation. As you can see, this object is characterized by two quantities, basically. Well, the OQ, that is the charge of the particle, and Q, the charge of the particle, and C, that is the curve where the particle is moving, okay? So, as I said already, this object from a physical point of view describe the coupling of, well, the change of phase that is due to some external particle that is coupled to the theory. I say external because it's not dynamical, because the curve, it's, you know, it doesn't change. It's fixed from the external. Okay, so let's now look at UN theory. So the Young-Mills theory. I can still define an object like we have done before, but now I need some extra ingredient, and in particular, I have to take, well, okay, the exponential is made by stuff that is not commuting. So if I want to define this object, I have to specify the order in the way I have to say the way they are the order, because they are not commuting. So this P is just a path ordering, and so to make this object gauge invariant, I have to take the trace. Now, when I take the trace over the gauge group, I can take this trace over any kind of representation of the gauge group. So in particular, if I have a group that is UN, I can have as many, there are several representations of this group, and the representation are basically product representation, and they are characterized by a Young tableau. The Young tableau basically characterizes the representation of the symmetric group, but there is a one-to-one correspondence between the representation of the symmetric group and representation of UN. Now, okay, as before, this object is still characterized by two quantities, the curve, where I consider the loop, and the representation of the UN, okay? Now, like before, basically, the representation of the group is still is the charge of the external particle, and the curve where I consider the path, where I consider the loop, is basically the curve where the external particle is moving. Okay. So, for instance, from a physical point of view, what is the meaning of this Wilson loop? So, for instance, if my external particle is a quark, have to take the trace over the fundamental representation, because it works, transforms in the fundamental representation. In particular, I can take this kind of path, okay, this kind of curve, that is just a rectangle, where one side is along a spatial coordinate and the other one is the time. And if the time component, well, the time side of the rectangular is much bigger than the spatial side, the expectation value of this Wilson loop basically tells me the potential between the quark and the anti-quark that are traveling along this loop. Okay. So in this way, I can get the potential between quark and anti-quark, and basically these Wilson loop are kind of order parameter for confinement. So because if you have a theory that is confining, you can get you should get a potential that is linear in the distance between the quark. Okay. Okay, so now let's have a look a bit to the ADS-CFT duality. So first, let's see the statement of the duality, and then we'll try to justify a bit this. And so basically the statement is that it's string theory defined on this background, ADS5 plus S5, where ADS5 is a anti-de Sitter in 5 dimension, S5 is the sphere in 5 dimension. So string theory in this background is equivalent to super young Mills theory with 4 supercharges, with a UN gauge group. Now, in this theory, well, in the theory there are several parameters. For instance, well, from the gauge theory, in the string theory side, the parameters are well, L, that is the radius of ADS5 and S5, and this L is related to N, that on the other side is just the rank of the group. Okay. Now there are several limits where you can make computation in these the two sides of the duality. For instance, it's important to take n to infinity because when you take n to infinity, on the gauge theory side, you can consider only planar graphs, and on the string theory side, basically, you can neglect the string interaction. And one thing that is important is that, the gauge theory, you know that on the gauge theory side, you can make computation when lambda is very small. Here, lambda is the top coupling that is basically the effective coupling of the gauge theory, so it's too small to make computation. And on the other side, also, you need, otherwise, well, this lambda must be big, because if this is where this gravity description of the theory is trustable. So you can understand from this thing, you can understand that you can use gravity theory, well, string theory on this background, to make prediction about gauge theory at strong coupling. Okay.
L to the 4 is 4 pi of what?
GS is the G string.
Okay.
Is a string coupling. Is N?
Okay.
That's alpha prime squared.
Alpha is that?
Yeah, it's the string length.
Okay.
But alpha prime is a length, string length per square. It's one of the constants in the string thing.
It's a string
thing. It's the inverse of the string thing.
The inverse of the string thing.
Yeah. Well, the tension is 1 over 2 pi. Okay, so this one is the statement.
ADS-CFT, so just a few words on how people can arrive to this kind of statement using stringy arguments. So the idea is just to look at physics of deep brains. And so these deep brains are, well, objects that can have a higher dimension. I mean, they are higher dimensional objects. And so let's consider a stack of deep brains that are along this component of flat space-time. And the idea is that these deep brains can be described in two completely different ways. Okay, when this parameter, again, G strings times N is very big, you can describe these deep brains like a solution of supergravity. And once you have the solution of supergravity, you put string theory on this background, and you describe the dynamics of this system in this way. On the other side, when lambda is very small, well, it's perturbative string theory is a good, you can apply perturbative string theories. So basically, the right description of this D-brain is like hyperplanes where open string ends on the D-brain. So this one is called closed string description. The other one is the open string description. Now, now there is something. Well, here comes the idea of Maldacenov taking a particular limit on this on the two sides of the of this dual description, and on the Maldacena limit basically correspond to just look at the physics very close to the brain. Okay, and on this side basically you end up with a string theory on ADS5 process 5 because ADS5 process 5 is the metric very close to the brain. On the other side. To the brain, because this one, well, you describe the brain as a kind of solution. It's a kind of black hole. It looks like a black hole, and look, well, you go close to the brain, you go closer to the horizon. Okay, and it's an ADS5 process 5. On the other side, this limit is a kind of low energy limit. So what happens basically is that you can forget, you can neglect the interaction between the gauge theory and gravity, so you end up only with this. Gauge theory, and if of course opinion is with a UN gauge theory. And if you believe that these two descriptions are equivalent, you arrive to the equivalence between string theory on ADS5 process 5 and this gauge theory. Okay. So that's quickly the argument. Okay, so why we say holography? Well, this is a very quick.
Well, why should this to the left and the right side? Well, what's the main reason they should be equivalent? I mean, you're using different lambda, right? So that sounds like you have different coupling in the thing.
It's a different limit to the same.
Yes, yeah, different limit of the same object, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The same object in the different limit.
And what is the parameter that I vary? What is the parameter?
GS and it's still lambda.
Mm-hmm.
Even before the Maldacena limit is still lambda that matter.
Mm.
Then after you take the limit lambda, once you have the after the Maldacena limit lambda, on the gauge theory side is the top cap.
So you're saying changing lambda doesn't change the fluid?
You have the same object, you know, you have two different range of lambda. One range has the same, the other range has the other one.
But your claim is that these two theories. These two regimes are presumably equivalent.
The object is the same.
It's like if you have electrical dynamics, you have the coupling constant, which is a random coupling constant depending on what scale you probe it.
Yeah.
So you have one theory, and depending on what scale you probe it, you should get different physical results.
Yeah, but it was the claim that they didn't you kind of say the model string conjecture is really but physically that the two sides are physically the same, right?
Yeah.
But you were just saying.
Yeah, but they're physically the same, but at different energies. I mean, it's
the
same theory.
They are different, the same, but you don't know all well. After I have done the Maldacena limit, they should be still the same, but we don't know how to, we don't know how to deal with the PhD of stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. But yeah, if you could manage that, they should be the same without the Okay. So holography. Okay, let's see why producing stars. So roughly, okay, because I can ADS5 for the spider, for ADS5 for the spider, I can take this parameterization, and in particular for ADS5, I take the Poincaré dimension. And you see that if I send U to infinity, the only thing that well comes in the metric is just this part here. Okay? So that it's only it's in cosmic space in four dimensions. So the idea is that the gauge theory on this, let's say, boundary of ADS5 process 5, gauge theory on this boundary describes all the physics of the rest that it's inside the box. Okay? So in this way, I have a kind of holographic the system. Okay, so now let's go to the Wilson loop in this. So the idea, so if they are equivalent, string theory and any of Young Mills, whatever I have in Young Mills, I should be able to map it to the string theory side. Okay? In particular, we have seen that in the game theory, we have young whistle loops. So what is a whistle loop in this thing to decide? Okay, this is again a proposal by Manda Sena, and the proposal is that if I have a whistle loop, that is a loop that is defined on QFC, on any of those perennial yields, that is basically the boundary of this practice 5. If I want to compute the expectation value of this object, whistle loop computed in fundamental representation, it traces taking a fundamental representation. I have basically to evaluate the partition function of the strings that it is given by, well, it's a string that is living in ADS5 process 5, and at the boundary of ADS5 ends on the cube where the whistle loop is defined. Okay. So that's the description. And since we work on string theory where in the regime where lambda is very big, I can just take the classical solution for the string. So I have that basically if I want to compute the implementation value of the whistle loop defined on the QC, I can just find the classical solution for the string that on the boundary of ADS5 process 5 ends on the cube where the whistle loop is computed. Okay? And this thing, well, people have done this kind of computation, in particular, in when I have a gauge theory that it's not conformal, that when you get to show
confinement, using the stringy argument, you get the right result that the potential is proportional to the distance between the coils. Okay. So when I compute the whistle loop on the rectangular end, so I find the confinement like I should. Okay. Okay, now let me say something about the gauge theory I'm going to consider, that is any for super young mills. In this gauge theory, the field content is made by, there is a gauge potential, there is a bunch of scalars and fermions, because it's a supersymmetric theory. Now, the whistle loop now describes the coupling of a superparticle to all the fields in the theory. So it's given by this expression. I actually consider only bosonic Wilson loops, so I don't consider the, well, the particle doesn't move in the superspace. It's general here. What I've done until now, it's what I say that when I take the trace in the fundamental, I have a string. Fundamental, yeah, that's the bit. Then we will see how to, when it, the representation is different, we will see what we have to do. So this is the Wilson loop. Now I have also coupled to this scalar field. And let me say that the theory is supersymmetric, so it's invariant under this kind of supersymmetric transformation. This epsilon is the parameter of the supersymmetry transformation. It's, I use 10-dimensional spinors because it's better for to make a comparison with a gauge theory, with a string theory. So these epsilon, the epsilon are basically Majorana-Weyl spinors in 10 dimensions, so they have 16 components. But okay, actually, I don't consider the general Wilson loop for this kind of construction, but the half BPS Wilson loops. Here, half BPS, well, basically means that these kind of operators are preserve some of the supersymmetries, in particular, half of the supersymmetries of the theory. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, have this, the Lagrangian, that it's invariant under, well, the supersymmetry algebra. I plug this Wilson loop in the path integral, and I still want that this object preserve half of the supersymmetry. Okay? So if I require this, basically, I get that I have to take a particular curve where evaluate the Wilson loop, and in particular the Wilson loop now is defined. I have to take a Wilson loop along the time, okay? So just a line, basically that's a Wilson line. So half BPS Wilson loop are just Wilson lines, so it's just this object, okay? No, it's not close because but it's still gauge invariant because at a minus a plus infinite time. Yeah, that's right. So this object, one can show that, the bosonic symmetries are broken in this way. In particular, the conformal group basically is broken by, I have a line, okay? I put a line in the theory, so I still have the conformal group along the line, that is, and the conformal group is SU11. And, there is a space perpendicular to the line, that is SO3, that is isomorph to SU2. Also, the Wilson loop will pick up one of the scalars. Okay. So basically, I broke the SO6 to the SO5, and the supersymmetry generators are they have to satisfy this condition. So this means that basically the algebra, the superalgebra, the original superalgebra of the theory that is okay, you cannot read, but it's PSU224. Well, it's just a name for the original superalgebra of the any force of pyramids is broken down to another superalgebra that is preserved by this half DPS Wilson loop. Well, I'm telling this because so now we have to look for a possible candidate in the string theory side that could be associated to this half DPS Wilson loop. And a strategy is a good strategy is to look for an object that preserves the same supersymmetries, the same superalgebra, like the half DPS Wilson loop. So, for instance, in for the strings, for the Wilson loop in the fundamental representation, we know that this object should be a string. So the strings that is associated to this particular half DPS Wilson loop should be a strings that preserve the same supersymmetries like the half DPS Wilson loop. In particular, well, that's the strings in is described by the worksheet that it's spanning on the ADS5 process 5. And this is described by some parameterization like this. And what well, basically the solution that I have to consider is just a strings that is spanning an ADS2 inside the ADS5. Okay. So the worksheet of the strings is an ADS2 inside the ADS5. And it's just a point in the S5. Okay. And it results that this kind of strings preserve the same supersymmetries like the previous like the half DPS Wilson loop. okay, so this was for the representation, let's say for a fundamental representation, but what about higher representation, like you were asking? So the idea, well, there are some arguments to say that when I consider higher representations, representation that is not the fundamental, I have to consider more than one strings going on, well, sitting on top of each other, okay? Now, we have seen that when I have one strings, I can describe the action like, well, as I said before, I don't know if I say it, but the action of the strings is basically proportional to the worksheet of the string. Okay. And when I have more than one strings, I don't know, well, I cannot use this kind of picture. I cannot use the number of correction, okay? But one thing that I can do is to describe these strings like some higher dimensional object, okay? This is something that happened. There are other kind of phenomena in, well, cases in string theory where this happened. When you have objects that are sitting on top of each other, you can describe them with some other object that has higher dimension, okay? So in particular now, I will try to describe these strings like some D-brains that have some fundamental string charge on them, okay, on the word point. Okay, so now I will just tell you the proposal for what could be a Wilson loop in the anti-symmetric representation, and then in the symmetric representation, and then I will try to prove this kind of proposal. I will prove this proposal, maybe if I have time. Okay. Okay, so the idea is that a Wilson loop in the anti-symmetric representation, that is basically just, you know, it's just a Young tableau with one column. The idea is that this object is described by a D5 brain. Okay, this D5 brain, it's five dimensional. It has five dimensional spatial coordinate plus one time coordinate. And the way I take the embedding of this object in ADS5 plus S5, it's an ADS2 inside ADS5 and an S4 inside S5. So this object, like before, this object preserves the same isometries of the half DPS Wilson loop. So that's the first check. Another nice thing is that. So I take this, well, I make an ansatz for the solution. And so basically, this object is an ADS2 in ADS5 and an S4 inside S5, okay? But the S4 that it's inside the S5 is characterized by a latitude angle, okay? Now, it results that this latitude angle depends on the number of fundamental strings that I dissolve on the D5, okay? So in particular, if the strings is zero, the number of strings is zero, the angle is theta, is zero, okay? So it means that the S4 is just a point on the North Pole. Now, when I put n fundamental strings on the D5, the angle is pi. Okay, so I am at the South Pole. So this means that basically there is a maximum number of fundamental strings that I can dissolve on this thing. And if I identify the number of, as we wanted to do, the number of strings with the number of boxes in the Wilson loop, this is in agreement with the fact that when I take the anti-fundamental, the anti-symmetric representation, that is a column, I can have a maximum number of boxes, okay? That is n, that is the rank of the. Yeah, it's big. Yeah.
Yes, perfect. For this analysis, no. Very important. Okay, so this is the first check. For the D3, well, for the Wilson loop in the symmetric representation, the claim is that this object is described by a D3, okay, a D3 probe. And the idea is that this D-brain is described by Wilson, well, is associated to the Wilson loop in the symmetric representation. And one thing that we can say is that on this D3 brain, I can put as many charges as I want, as many fundamental string charges as I want. And this is in agreement with the fact that when I take a symmetric representation, I can have as many boxes as I want. And this is the first check. Okay, now I'll try to give a proof of these two proposals. So remember that when we described the Madsen and Wallicky, we had a picture like this. So now let me put something else on top, just an X35. Okay. So if I have an X35, things change. Okay. So in particular, the reality side, the stuff of the brain still gives me this 5 plus 5. And this D5 is on the flat space is this kind of, well, it's positive plus sits on this along this coordinate. This kind of D5, when I take when I do all this procedure, becomes the brain probe that I've been describing before. Okay. Now on the other side,
I said like now you check that this D5 things there, then you are now solving again the
Sugra
equation,
or what do you do for that? No, now it's not, so yeah, that's good. Okay, because this D3, they are described by Sugra, okay? But this one is just one, so it doesn't back react, okay? So I can describe this D5 like a probe.
Uh-huh, I think, like a test
project. Like, yeah, that's it. And it's exactly the probe I've been describing before. Now, on the other side, if I have this D5, well, the D3, well,
how do you know the path reaction is negligible?
Well, but it's only one.
And on the charge that
it has. Yeah, but it's negligible with respect to this bunch of D3 because there are n.
Oh,
yeah. That's a bit, yeah. And it's a little bit. Okay. So. Okay, so on the other side, so I basically have to have gauge theories, and the gauge theories are given by the zero modes of the strings that are attached to these brains. Okay. Now on the strings within the D3, okay, they give me the angle for solving and miss before, but now I have this D5. Okay, so the strings between D5 and D3, they will give me some defective theory that I will describe later. But there are also some
strings that are on the D5 itself. But when I take the Madsen limit, this degrees of freedom of the couple. But they are still important, like we will show later. So the idea is that you see, okay, here I have Madsen. Well, I have, well, the D3, they still give me, like before, ADS5, a process 5, and the other side have the gauge theory. Okay. When I put a D5, here I have the probe, like this probe I've been describing before. And on the string theories, well, on the gauge theories, I have this stuff. So what I have to prove is that all this stuff, it's a Wilson loop in the anti-symmetric representation. Okay. If I prove that, I have proved the equivalent. So, okay. So let's see a bit better this defect field theory. So what I have to do is to quantize the degrees of freedom between the D3 and the D5 brains. And they give rise to this kind of defect field theory. And these are fields, these chi are fermions. And they live, well, it's one-dimensional field theory because the brains intersect only a long time. So these degrees of freedom are localized in a long time. So this is the extra degrees of freedom. They transform in the fundamental of UN, this chi field. Okay. This is for the strings between the D3 and the D5. The strings, well, there is no dynamics for the gauge theory that comes from the strings that are attached to the D5, okay, D5, D5. But still, well, as I said before, this D5 has some fundamental charge on it, okay? So I have to encode these kind of things in some way. And the way I do that is just to couple, well, I put, you know, I couple the gauge theory, the gauge field on the D5 with some charge, okay, that's K, because we say that there are K fundamental charges, okay? But these, so now I introduce these the gauge fields on the D5. So also the chi is coupled to the D5. I mean, the chi is coupled to the D5. They are charged under the gauge field on the D5 and also on the D3. Right? So basically what I have is the modification of my N equals 4 Supergamier's theory is given by this defective theory plus this S extra that is encoded the fact that there are some charge on this D5. Yeah.
Where is the Langmuir theory? Is it sitting on these main brains that you drew before, or how do I plan to?
Yeah. You mean the N equals 4 Supergamier?
Yeah.
It's sitting on the D3.
On the D3, the normal ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So is this stuff that I have tried. It's made by ATs, phi, and all that.
And now you say there's an additional gauge field that is sitting on the
right.
That's what you just described.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So that's not the gauge field of the end, that's original.
It's another one, yeah. That's why there's a field, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so what you have to do is just integrate, well, you know, in the end you just put everything in the back integral. So what you have to do is just to integrate out this extra piece of field. Okay. And, you know, I have this, this object here, okay. S, this x, and this one. I just integrate out these extra degrees of freedom that are associated to the D5, to the D5. Okay. So the way I can do, in this case, it's not difficult, but okay. I'm describing it a bit. But basically, I can take a gauge choice like this, where A0 plus 5 is just diagonal. So this, well, the element in the matrix becomes basically the entity of each of the. Of the fermions, chi, okay. The chi are made by n elements because they have so many fundamentals. So basically, I have a bunch of n fermions with energy from the r. When I take this path integral, well, for the moment, let's forget about the s extra. Just consider the integration of this part. And, well, basically, I have to compute the partition function, okay? And so here I get just the partition function of the fermions. Now, okay, maybe I'll skip some detail about this. But just using properties of symmetric polynomials and partition functions for fermions, we can show that basically making this integral, okay, performing the path integral, gives rise to a reasonable indefinite linear representation. Okay? So in this way, I've proved that the D5, I've been talking before, is equivalent to a reasonable indefinite symmetric representation. Okay.
Okay. So, before you were talking about these D5 objects, I mean, when you, in the initial example, when you talk about fundamental representation, it was kind of easy to imagine geometrically. Okay, you have the Wilson loop in the boundary, and then you have this world sheet of the string going into the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That was intuitively easy, but now you're talking about D5 frames and why.
But
how do I have to imagine this whole thing?
It's actually the same thing because, well, this D5 is D5 I consider it, I'm considering it's just two-dimensional object in AES5, so it's exactly like these things. But there is a well, there is another part of the sphere.
You mean the higher dimensions going into the small compact dimension?
Yeah, that's right. Just a sphere. You can think of this like a space with a sphere attached.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. But I still have the description that on the boundary, the d5 gets, you know, ends on the reason loop, and it does in this case.
Do you need the expectation value for this?
Yeah, that's right. If I take the expectation value, I haven't taken it yet, but if I take the expectation value, this object would be e to the minus s of the d5, you know.
Okay.
The partition function of the d5.
So the partition function is just proportional to the classical listener?
No. It's to the expectation value.
Okay.
Yeah. But for the moment, I haven't taken it. Just integrate out the degrees of freedom of I have integrated out the degrees of freedom of the d5 and the Wilson loop here. Then if I also integrate out, you know, the degrees of freedom of any of those binomial sets, it comes to the question. But then
And that you like make something of the another theory, right? Where you can you have to take different limits, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. Okay, let's. Okay, I think we're okay.
You got them to 935.
935. Okay, so I can show that this one. Well, I have for the D3, I have another picture to describe how the D3 arise. Just then, well, I can skip all the computation for this. So, what? Okay. So, as before, I'm going to use this argument to. To prove that the probe I've been talking before is equivalent to Wilson in the symmetric representation. So it results that what we have to do now is just to start from a stack of n plus 1 frame, take one of them and separate it. Okay? Like this. So on the gauge theory side, kind of well separate it and put some fundamental things stretched with it. So on the gauge theory side, on the string theory side, this is like to insert a probe like the one I described before, which is 5 plus 5. On the other side, basically, well, this extra D3 introduces some extra degrees of freedom in the field, okay? So in particular, what I have to do is just if I'm considering the gauge theory to separate one of the brain, it means that I have just to start from u n plus one super Camille's and take an ulterior
vacuum for the theory. So I basically give expectation value to one of the scalars. And this is in the string theory language is like to separate one of these brains. So doing this basically and then I have the non trivial vacuum, I expand my theory around this vacuum, as usual in field theory. And so I get, maybe I can say some words. So what I have to do is just to break the symmetry from un plus 1 to un times u1. And so I define my original field, that's a gauge field in un plus 1 theory. It's made by gauge fields in u1 theory and gauge field in u1 theory, plus this object w that are they are bosons, they are massive bosons. And they transform in the fundamental of UN, but they are also charged under the U1 of A field, okay? And in particular, the mass of this object is just this D, this expectation value of the one of the scalars. So that the string theory language is just the distance between this brain.
You're taking the flow energy remnant?
Yeah.
So, shouldn't you be breaking the space there? So how does it
No, I just break the gauge scene.
And that gives you the non-relativistic one?
Yeah. No, well, it's okay. When I break the symmetry, it gives me this double, well, this omega, that kind of mass. Okay. Uh-huh. That's just, you know, just take this vacuum, okay, and expand the fields around the vacuum. You get the gauge theory for A, gauge theory for A field, plus these extra fields, that are just fields with a mass. Okay. that goes into the bus. And then when you send deep to infinity, because you want to take okay. Sending deep to infinity is like to send the mass result to infinity, so it's like to take another basic limit of these bosons. And so you end up with this modification for the end. Yeah.
I have a question, like before you were saying kind of when you have been deep range of means and on the ML side that the ML slips on these deep ranges. Now you or in the case when you had this deep range as a test part, you kind of became an operator. Now here you say it becomes a W field somehow. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, why is that? How does it relate to the subjugation form?
No, I mean, I just say, okay, if you have a stack of brains on top of each other, you know, the U and T are defined on this brain, okay? But then if you separate one of them, you have, let's say, you have the U and
theory.
Yeah. The U and T are defined on the stack of N brains. Mm-hmm. So if I have N plus 1 brains, I have the U and plus 1 theory on this stack of brains. Mm-hmm. If I take one of them and I separate it, mm-hmm. I have a gauge, a U and gauge theory on the N stack of on the stack of brain made by N brain, and then you want here on the other brain. Okay.
So there, does it also mean that they're not interacting with each other?
Well, that's right. If you send the distance to infinity, they don't interact, yeah.
Okay.
Because yeah. They interact only through this omega, but if you send B to infinity, the omega has infinite mass to each other. So, but what we have to do now is integrate out these x as a
freedom. And like before, well, now it's well, there is something. As I said, well, there are some fundamental strings stretching between the two stack of brains. And so the way I encode this is when I take the path integral, is just to consider a non-trivial vacuum for the path integral. So just I make some basically like create W bosons at time minus infinity, and I destroy them at time plus infinity. And then I take the path integral and I get exactly the Wilson loop in the symmetric representation. So in this way, like before, we proved that the D3 probe is equivalent to a Wilson loop in the symmetric representation. Okay, now I'm close to the end, but just want to say that until now I've been showing that Wilson loop in the symmetric representation, so I mean just the row is the D3, Wilson loop in the anti-symmetric, just the column is a D5, but in principle it's possible to show that the Wilson loop in a general, well, not in principle, this has been shown, that a Wilson loop in a general representation can be described using the same procedure by a stack of D5 or a stack of D3. Okay, the proof goes in the same way. So, well, okay. So why all of this? I mean, so the idea is that. So if you have a gauge theory, if you want to study the SCFT, you know, whatever you have on a gauge theory, you should be able to map it on the string theory side. Now, in this way, we know that at least, well, half BTS Wilson loop, all the half BTS Wilson loop in all the representations, we know what they are in gauge theory. They are the brains, okay? But also for, I don't know, let's say computational practical point of view, this kind of description, well, this kind of procedure is useful because we can compute expectation value of Wilson loop using a strong coupling, using stringy arguments. For instance, I could just give you this example. If I want to compute the expectation value of a Wilson loop in this anti-symmetric representation, and then I consider, well, C0 is the rectangular, that one that tells me the potential between the particles. Okay? So it results that the energy between the particle and antiparticle is given by this function. This one is just the potential for the fundamental representation, okay? So there is this factor that tells me the difference between this representation and the fundamental. Now, when k is equal to n, this theta is equal to pi, so basically there is no potential between these two particles. And this is nice because this, when I take this, well, a representation that is a column with n boxes, this is basically the singulet. And this is in agreement with the fact that states in the singulet do not interact. So it's a kind of nice result for
you.
Yeah.
And that's a cross-vibration. You that you also have that?
Well, okay, one thing, the geometrical thing I can say is that this D5, the D5 is graphing in S4 on the S5, okay?
Uh-huh.
You're right, you're seeing it. When and at this point, the S4 shrinks to a point.
No, wait, what can you say?
That the S4 becomes a point.
Uh-huh.
So that's the geometric thing that explains it. It's kind of a special thing.
But you couldn't say that you have any picture of the string starting at the point and goes back to it. Because that's what exactly what you have in the United States.
Okay. No, I don't know.
But that would be an interesting question because that should be related. I mean, something like that should be hidden.
Yeah. Okay, that's a nice comment. Okay, so the conclusions.
Basically, I already said this. Guess I'll stop here. Next thing.
5 minutes for questions. So. Well, I have a question. So these Wilson loops have BPS Wilson loops for supergiving. Do you know if there's any if they're physically interesting? Like, is there any chance that you can get some experiment with a quantum plasma or something?
I know that what people use in the quantum plasma are not super symmetric Wilson loops.
No,
but I mean, the idea is that, I mean, we use these half-BPS Wilson loops because you can make, it's easier to make this kind of construction in brains and to make this kind of proof. But now, once you have this argument, you can generalize it to prisms that are not symmetric, So you can hopefully use these brains also in this case, but they're not super symmetric.
So do you have any idea how you can break the symmetry further to?
Just need to take, for instance, instead of taking a line, just take a general path before you see maybe super symmetry.
Well, how would you break that symmetry in the bulk theory for that?
You take the embedding, you take strings that, it's not the ABS2 strings, for instance. Like, it's something that's general worksheet that breaks the.
Any other questions? So let's thank you.